sending you back. The system sucked. I motioned toward the door with my head and whispered, "Tell her you're getting dressed, and you'll be down in a few minutes." Lily did, but her voice broke. Mom said she'd meet her downstairs. It was only a matter of time before my mother noticed I wasn't around. Lily and I had kept our relationship a secret. We were afraid my parents would think it was a bad idea to keep two 15-year-olds who were in love in the same house. I mean, it was, but they didn't need to know that. They also didn't need to know that I snuck into her bed every night after everyone was asleep. That would most certainly freak Mom out.
"I don't want to lose you," Lily sobbed quietly.
I cupped her face and wiped away her tears with my thumbs. "Don't cry. You're never going to lose me, Lily. Not ever. I love you."
"I love you too."
We held each other for a long time. Eventually, though, we had to let go.
"I'll write to you every day we can't be together."
I smiled. "Okay."
"You don't have to write back. I know you don't like writing stuff. Just promise me one thing."
"What's that?"
"You'll write to me if you fall in love with someone else and tell me all about her so I'll know you're happy and I should stop writing. Otherwise, I'll never give up on us."
I grinned and kissed her nose. "You got a deal. Works out pretty good for me, because I'll never have to write one damn letter." I'd never met anyone who had hallucinations before. My mom had been an addict, and she would sleep for hours on end, sometimes days when she was on a binge. But even when she was at her worst, she never heard voices in her head. This was the second Sunday I'd visited Lily since she moved out, but the first time her mother had been home. Rose had a job waitressing on weekends, so she'd been at work last week, but apparently this week she was incapable of going. I understood why now. Rose was lying on the couch, smoking a cigarette so small that I couldn't imagine it wasn't burning her fingers. Her mouth kept moving as she spoke quietly to herself, but I couldn't figure out what she was saying. Lily tugged my hand when she caught me staring and told me to come to her room.
"But,"
I leaned and whispered,
"what about the cigarette?"
Lily sighed and walked over. She slipped the cigarette from between her mother's two fingers and dropped it into a half-full glass of water on the coffee table, which already had a dozen other tiny remnants of filters. Her mom didn't even seem to notice. I took a seat on Lily's bed and she hopped onto my lap.
"I guess she stopped taking her medicine?"
"She ran out a week ago and didn't refill it. I hadn't been checking, so I didn't notice right away, but I called the pharmacy and I can pick up the new one later."
"How long will she stay like that?"
Lily sighed.
"I don't know, but she was doing so good."
Things had been normal for me for more than 10 years now, but I still remembered the constant disappointment of my mom sleeping all the time, not to mention all the scary guys who hung around our apartment. It was easy to forget my life had once been like Lily's.
"Maybe we should call someone? Like CPS?"
Lily's eyes widened.
"No!
I thought you wanted to stay with us. If they see her like that, they'll remove you again, and you'll probably come back to our house." Lily frowned.
"I do want that. But now that I'm back with her, I can't leave her like this. She needs me. They drug her up too much in the hospital."
"I know, but she doesn't look so good."
"The medicine will make her better, I swear."
I didn't like it, but I understood wanting to take care of your mother, even when she should have been taking care of you. I sighed.
"Fine."
Lily wrapped her arms around my neck.
"Did you get my letters?"
"I did." "You really don't want me to write back?" "I couldn't do it every day like you. I wouldn't know what to say, but maybe I could write once or twice a week."
"Nope. If I ever see a letter from you in my mailbox, my heart's going to be broken because it will be your goodbye."
I wasn't going to argue, considering I hated writing anything, especially letters. Plus, I had better things to do. I brushed Lily's hair from her shoulder and leaned in for a kiss. "I missed you this week."
"I miss sleeping with you at night. I haven't been sleeping well without you. I got used to the sound of your heartbeat lulling me to sleep."
"Well, you might not hear it at night anymore, but it still belongs to you." Lily and I hung out in her room until I had to go. My mom was picking me up, and I wanted to wait downstairs so she didn't come up and see the condition of Lily's mom. Reluctantly, We untangled our bodies, straightened our clothes, and headed back to the living room. Lily had slipped out a few times over the last few hours to check on her mom, but I hadn't seen her since I came in hours ago. Rose wasn't spacing out on the couch anymore. Now she walked back and forth from one side of the living room to the other, pacing. When you spent a good chunk of your childhood around junkies and addicts, you learned to read how stable a person is from just a quick look into their eyes. And Lily's mother looked the opposite of stable right now. Noticing me looking at her, she stopped pacing and stared at me. Her face twisted with anger, and she walked toward me with purpose. I stepped in front of Lily. Rose's eyes looked crazed.
I know you told them.
My brows furrowed.
Who?
The doctors.
It's your fault.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Harrison. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Before I could register what the hell was happening, she wound up and slapped me straight across the face.
Liar!
Lily jumped between us and pushed her mom back.
Mom, what the hell? What are you doing?
He tells the doctors.
She wagged her finger at me.
He tells them everything.
Mom.
Lily put her arm around her mother and guided her to the couch.
You're confused. You stopped taking your medicine and it made you sick again.
They sat down.
I'm going to go get it from the pharmacy.
Her mom started to cry. All of the anger in her face was gone, replaced by sheer sadness. It was the craziest transformation I'd ever seen. It took Lily a few minutes to calm her down, but eventually she got her back into the position she'd been in when I walked in, lying on the couch, smoking a cigarette in an almost catatonic state, and whispering to herself. Lily walked me to the door and waited until we were in the hall to speak. She reached up and stroked my cheek.
I'm so sorry. Are you okay? She sometimes gets hallucinations, and they always seem to center on the doctors.
Jesus. Yeah, I'm fine. But I don't think you should stay here.
No, I can't leave her like this. She needs me.
I shook my head.
I don't know, Lily. That was fucked up. How do you know she won't hurt you? She won't. I promise. Please don't say anything to anyone.
I hated to leave her, but a part of me did understand the need to help a screwed-up parent, right or wrong. I used to cook mine dinner at 5 years old.
Okay.
But get her back on the meds tonight. And if she isn't a little better by next week, we need to get you out of here.
Chapter 11. I wondered if he'd be here. I was mid-conversation with some former colleagues I hadn't seen in a few years when I got my answer. The sight of him made me lose my train of thought. On the other side of the room, Grant Lexington stood wearing a classic black tuxedo. He was talking to an older gentleman, which gave me the opportunity to really take him in. Tall, broad shoulders, yet not overly bulky, a narrow waist with one hand resting casually in his pants pocket. Even from a distance, his confidence registered. There was something about the way certain men held themselves that showed they were in charge, and that really worked for me. It could take a man who was a 7 and make him an 11 in my book. On the other hand, a handsome 10 with a meek personality could be reduced to a 5. Mr. Confident held a drink in his left hand and raised it to his mouth, but he stopped before drinking. He seemed to sense something and looked around the room. When his eyes caught mine, a slow, wicked smile spread across his face. He excused himself from the conversation and strode toward me. My body tingled as I watched him approach with long strides, and I turned from the group I'd been standing with. "What a pleasant surprise," he said. I tried to appear casual as I sipped my champagne. "I'm filling in for Bickman." He nodded.
"Of course."
Grant eyed the group next to me.
"Are you here with a date?"
"No, you?" He smiled and shook his head.
"Would a compliment be unwelcome? I wouldn't want to sexually harass you."
"Compliments are always welcome, Mr. Lexington." His eyes sparkled. Taking hold of my elbow, he led me a few feet away from the group I'd been standing with.
"That's a dangerous thing to say to a man like me."
"What was the compliment anyway?" Grant's eyes swept over me.
"You look beautiful tonight."
I blushed. "Thank you." Grant stopped a waiter as he passed. He gulped back the rest of the amber liquid in his glass and slipped the flute of champagne from my hand, setting them both down on the waiter's tray. I was drinking that. He motioned for the waiter to move along and returned his attention to me.
I'll get you more when we're done.
Done with what? He held out his hand.
Dance with me.
I shook my head. I'm not sure that's such a good idea. He smirked.
I'm fucking positive it's not.
Grant took my hand and led me to the dance floor. I debated arguing, but when he pulled me close and I felt the firmness of his chest and took in this delicious masculine scent, I forgot what I was even about to argue over. He led with the same kind of confidence he exuded, a quiet dominance mixed with natural grace.
So why no date tonight, Ireland?
He looked down at me as we glided around the dance floor. No suitable candidates, I guess.
Surely, in the entire city of Los Angeles, there's at least one eligible bachelor.
I must keep missing him. Grant smiled. We had good banter, that's for sure. Even that first nutty email exchange. Why no date for you tonight? I asked.
I guess I keep missing her, too.
We both laughed.
So, how are things going without Bickman?
Honestly, it's going fine. He's not really missed. Grant nodded.
Good to hear. Though I expected nothing less.
A minute later, the song ended, and the MC asked everyone to please find their seats in the main dining room. As soon as we stepped back from each other, a man approached Grant and asked to have a word with him. He looked like he didn't want to leave my side.
Where are you seated? He asked.
Table 9. You?
Table 1. I'll catch up with you later, he said. Thank you for the dance.
I smirked. It wasn't like you gave me any choice. Enjoy your evening, Mr. Lexington. For the rest of the night, Grant and I didn't cross paths. But that didn't mean my eyes lost track of him at any point. He was busy. Everyone in the room wanted a piece of him, which was probably for the best, since the piece I seemed to want of him wouldn't be the wisest business decision. Still, our gazes caught a few times, and we exchanged what I thought were flirty, private smiles. When the coffee came out, I knew it was time for me to make my exit. 3:30 would roll around soon enough. I scanned the room for Grant, figuring I'd wave goodbye, but he was engrossed in a conversation with a group of men who all looked old enough to be his dad. I weighed the right business etiquette. Did I go over and interrupt him to say goodnight, or simply leave? Undecided, I picked up my purse and said my goodbyes at my own table. When I was done, I looked back at where Grant had been talking, but he was no longer there. I figured fate had decided how to handle things for me. Though when I turned from my table, I crashed directly into a hard body. I backed up. Sorry. Oh, it's you.
You sound disappointed. Would you have preferred to walk into someone else?
I laughed. No, I was going to come over and say goodnight. But then you disappeared.
I guess I beat you to it. I'll walk with you. I was just heading out myself.
He hadn't looked like he was getting ready to leave a few minutes ago. Nevertheless, Grant put his hand on the small of my back and escorted me out of the ballroom. Outside, I took out my phone.
Did you drive? He asked.
No, I Ubered so I could have a glass of wine.
I have a car. I'll drop you.
That's not necessary.
I insist.
A minute later, a stretch limo pulled around. Apparently, him having a car meant a chauffeured one. The uniformed driver got out and went to open the back door, but Grant waved him off and opened it for me instead.
Thank you.
I slid across the back seat to make room for Grant. The rear of the limo was spacious enough to hold 10 people. Yet when he climbed in and joined me, it suddenly felt very small. I was hyper-aware of his thigh brushing against mine. As we started to move, I looked forward, but sensed Grant's eyes on me. What? I asked.
Nothing.
You were staring at me. He looked back and forth between my eyes.
What's your address?
For some crazy reason, I debated giving it to him. Grant must have seen the conflict written on my face and chuckled.
The driver needs it to take you home, Ireland. I wasn't inviting myself over.
Oh, right. Of course. Feeling like an idiot, I spouted off my address. Grant leaned forward and relayed it to the driver. When he settled back into his seat, his leg now firmly pressed against mine.
Tell me something about you, Ireland St. James.
What do you want to know?
Anything.
Okay. I thought about it. I've had 4 promotions within Lexington Industries over the last 9 years.
Tell me something I don't know.
I arched a brow. You've looked me up.
How else would I have decided to give you your job back?
I shifted in my seat to face him. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you something about me you don't know, if you promise to answer a question for me, honestly. He nodded.
I can do that.
It's not easy to come up with a little-known fun fact about yourself when you're under pressure, but I did my best. I can do a backflip from standing still. Grant smiled.
Interesting.
Thank you. My turn. Did you decide to hire me back because of what I looked like?
Truth.
That would be nice, yes? I watched the wheels in his head turn.
If I say yes, that could be sexist and inappropriate based on our work relationship.
I leaned over to him and lowered my voice. It'll be our little secret. He chuckled and shook his head.
I decided to hire you back because you have balls and don't put up with shit from people like Bickman. I respect that.
Oh, okay. As screwed up as it was, my shoulders slumped a bit. Grant leaned into me and whispered,
"The fact that you're gorgeous is just a bonus."
If I were a peacock, my feathers would have fanned. I smiled.
Thank you.
My turn. Tell me something about you that I don't know. I liked that he seemed to actually give it some thought, when he could have rattled off some business accomplishment. Instead, he said,
I'm one of 3 children. We were all adopted from different families after being foster children.
Oh, wow. That's really personal. I feel like I owe you more than a backflip now. Grant's eyes dropped to my lips before returning to meet my gaze.
I'll take whatever you want to give me.
There were a million things I could have shared. That I have a scar on my torso from a bicycle accident when I was 7. That I sleep with the light on because I don't like to be alone in the dark. Hell, I could have shared my bra size. Yet I had to go and share the most screwed up thing about me. My father is in prison for killing my mother. Grant's smile immediately fell. But while it affected him and changed the mood, there was no sign of surprise. I blew out a stream of air and closed my eyes. You already knew that too, didn't you? He nodded.
I pulled your file. We do extensive background checks on employees.
I forced a consolatory smile. Of course. Grant bumped his shoulder with mine.
But it still counts. I appreciate you sharing that with me.
Thanks to my big mouth, the fun mood had been transformed to gloomy. Though a thought popped into my head that might change that. So, if you pulled my file, does that mean you watched the offending video? Grant cleared his throat and looked forward.
I had to see what I was dealing with.
I watched him for a second. He looked slightly uncomfortable with the direction I'd taken the conversation, which only made me want to take it further down that path. Leaning in slightly, my voice registered lower.
Did you watch it more than once?
Grant struggled for a moment. He looked relieved when his cell phone rang. Pulling it from his pocket, he read the name flashing on the screen.
Excuse me, I have to take this.
He swiped.
What's going on?
I heard a woman's voice on the other end, but couldn't make out what she was saying.
How long ago did he leave?
The woman spoke louder. She sounded upset.
All right, I'm nearby. Don't leave the house. I'll find him.
He swiped to end the call and leaned forward to speak to the driver.
Get off at the next exit. Make a right on Cross Bay and a left on Singleton. Yes, sir.
Grant blew out a jagged breath. He frowned.
I'm sorry. We need to make a detour.
Is everything okay? He shook his head.
My grandfather has dementia. He's still in the early stages, but sometimes he takes off. My grandmother can't handle him anymore by herself, but they also won't let anyone help until things blow up. It's the 3rd time he's gone missing in the last 2 months.
I'm sorry. That must be tough to deal with.
It wouldn't be happening if they'd let the alarm installer do the job I hired him to do when he showed up at their house the other day. But they won't even let me have someone put in a monitor so my grandmother could be alerted to a door opening while she's sleeping.
The driver got off at the exit and made the turns Grant had instructed him to make. Then Grant directed him into the side streets of a pretty exclusive area. The homes were all set back on sprawling front lawns, and one house was bigger than the next. He told the driver to slow down and put on his brights.
This is their house. He usually takes the same path. Go to the end of the road and take a left and a quick right. Follow the winding path down to the water.
You sound like you have a pretty good idea where he's heading, I said. Grant looked out the windows, searching as he spoke.
He always goes to the same place.
A few minutes later, I spotted someone walking along the side of the road.
There, I pointed. I see someone up ahead.
Grant let out a deep breath.
That's him.
He instructed the driver to pull up behind him slowly, and he jumped out of the car before it had even rolled to a complete stop. I watched the interaction between the two men through the front window of the limo. Grant's grandfather was dressed in a brown bathrobe and slippers. His hair was disheveled, and he turned around, seeming confused when the headlights caught his attention. But his entire face lit up as he shielded his eyes and got a look at the man stalking his way. He definitely recognized his grandson. He opened his arms wide and waited as a tuxedoed and clearly frustrated Grant approached. I couldn't help but smile when Grant gave in and let the old man swamp him in a hug. The two of them spoke for a minute, and then Grant led him back to the limousine. Grant helped his grandfather climb in first. The man smiled at me warmly as he took a seat.
Well, aren't you pretty?
Grant got in and pulled the door shut. He shook his head.
Don't let the charm fool you. He's a dirty old man.
Grant's grandfather laughed and winked at me.
He exaggerates. I'm not that old. You gotta stop disappearing, Pops. It's almost midnight. I needed to see Leilani. This late? A man needs to see his girl when he needs to see his girl.
Grant sighed.
I'll tell you what. I'll take you to Leilani, but you have to agree to let me put an alarm on the house tomorrow. You worry Grams when you disappear.
Grant's grandfather folded his arms over his chest. He reminded me of a little boy who was told he couldn't have dessert until he ate all of his vegetables.
Fine.
Grant ran his hand through his hair and turned to me.
Do you mind if we make another stop? It's just down the road.
Of course not. Whatever you need to do.
Thank you.
He leaned forward to speak to the driver.
Head down to Castaway Marina, please.
Chapter 12.
Leilani wasn't a woman. She was a boat. A gorgeous sailboat. Grant helped his grandfather board and then held out his hand to me. Thank you, I said as I stepped onto the back deck. His grandfather disappeared into the cabin immediately.
He's going to put on Frank Sinatra. Sometimes he forgets his wife. Sometimes he wanders off and gets lost. But he never forgets about this boat or Frank.
I looked around the wide back seating area. I can see why. This boat is incredible.
Thank you. Pops built it almost 60 years ago. He gave it to me as a gift on my 21st birthday.
Oh, that's really special.
He built it as a sample, to use it to sell boats and take orders when he started his boat manufacturing business. He borrowed the money from a loan shark who would have broken his legs if he didn't get his money back. But he sold more than he could possibly build the first time he unveiled it at a boat show.
Grant laughed.
The loan shark's grandson actually has the newest model, and Pops plays cards with the shark, who lives in assisted living now.
I looked at the logo on the side of the boat. I didn't realize your family owned Lexington Craft. I don't know too much about boats, but those are really beautiful. I see them in movies every once in a while. Grant shook his head.
My family doesn't own it anymore. Well, we have a chunk of stock from when it was sold, but it's been a public company for a long time. Pops stayed on to run it after the sale, but he retired 10 years ago after he made sure the new management was as passionate about boat building as he is. He and my grandmother used to have a big boat over at the marina down the road, but they put it in storage a few years back,
after he was diagnosed. This one is special to him, and he likes to come visit her.
I smiled. That's understandable.
Frank Sinatra started to play through the speakers, and a minute later, Pops came out from the cabin. He had a box of cigars in one hand and a lit one in the other. His robe hung open, revealing a white t-shirt and white boxers.
Pops, why don't you tie your robe?
Pops handed Grant the box and pointed his cigar at me.
You look like that actress.
He snapped his fingers a few times, trying to recall.
What's her name? You know the one.
Snap, snap.
The one with the big...
I thought I knew where he was going with this. But then he snapped a few more times and shouted,
The one with the big balls!
Grant and his grandfather went hysterical with laughter. I had no idea what the hell they were cracking up about, but watching them made me smile anyway. I also noticed how different Grant looked when he was relaxed and had a genuine smile. He seemed so much younger, so much less intimidating. Grant was still chuckling when he explained what was so funny.
A couple of years ago, I took Pops to the store to get new shoes. He'd just started to struggle with his memory, and he wanted shoes with support soles, but he couldn't remember the words support soles. For some odd reason, he thought the word he was searching for was balls, so he yelled that he wanted balls at the top of his lungs.
He wiped tears from his eyes.
The salesperson had a good laugh, and from then on, Pop started to fill in words he can't remember with balls. It's interesting because he can always remember balls, but not the word he's searching for. Anyway, it cracks us up every damn time.
I'd thought being near cocky, confident, handsome Grant was dangerous, but seeing how sweet he was with his grandfather and how much he cherished their good times made my heart swell in my chest. Pop snapped his fingers a few more times. He seemed to get stuck on certain things.
Who the heck does she look like? She's tall. I don't remember her name. She looks like a younger Charlize Theron, Pops.
Grant studied my face and winked.
Except she's not as tall, and Ireland is prettier. Yeah, that's it.
Pops nodded and smiled.
Great balls on that one.
I'd been told I resembled that actress a few times over the years, but it had never made me blush before. The three of us sat at the back of the boat for a while. Pops kept us amused with stories about when he'd first started building boats and all the trial and error that went into it. It was pretty amazing how far his memory stretched back, yet he would sometimes forget who family members were or where he was. At one point, he stood and announced he was going to go listen to his baby purr.
He likes to listen to the engine, Grant explained.
He blew a ring of smoke from the cigar he'd lit a few minutes ago and held it up.
I think he comes for these more than anything these days. My grandmother won't let him smoke anymore. Not since he lit one and walked away and the rug caught on fire.
That's just as well. They're not good for you. And I never understood the appeal anyway. You don't even inhale. I always thought they were a kind of phallic symbol men like to flaunt. Grant examined his cigar and grinned.
Glad I got the extra thick Cohiba now.
Seriously, what's the appeal with cigars?
It's more about the moment it forces you to take. Sitting out here without this cigar in my hand, I'd probably take out my phone and scroll after a few minutes, or get up and do something around the boat. But a good cigar causes me to sit back and take a minute, reflect on my day or the beauty around me.
His eyes roamed my face, and his gaze heated.
There's a lot to appreciate at the moment.
Rather than squirm under his scrutiny, I opted to retake control. He had the cigar in the hand opposite me, so I leaned over him and plucked it from his fingers. Show me how to do this. I raised the smoldering cancer stick to my lips. Grant arched a brow.
You're going to smoke my cigar? Does that bother you?
A dirty grin tugged at the corner of his lips.
Of course not. You're welcome to wrap your lips around my Cohiba.
I rolled my eyes, but a shiver moved through me, even though there was no breeze.
Hold it up to your lips.
Okay.
Pretend you're sucking through a straw, but don't inhale. Just take the smoke into your mouth and then blow it out. Don't pull the air in deep from your diaphragm.
I did what he instructed. At least I thought I did. But after I inhaled, I inadvertently swallowed some of the smoke and started to cough. Grant chuckled.
I told you not to inhale.
I sputtered.
Apparently that's easier said than done.
I held out the cigar, and he took it back. We sat together in quiet after that for a while. Grant kept his eye on Pops, who had his head buried in the engine on the other side of the boat while he tinkered. I looked around at the other boats and the marina. You must get some beautiful sunsets here.
I do.
Probably romantic.
Do you bring your conquests here to get them in the mood?
Grant brought his cigar to his mouth and wrapped his lips around the end. I was slightly turned on by the sight, especially knowing my lips had been there earlier. He puffed 4 or 5 times, then blew out a thick cloud of white smoke.
If by conquests you mean dates, then the answer is no. I don't bring them here to get them in the mood.
Why not? He shrugged.
I just don't.
A loud slam brought our attention back to Pops. Grant jumped up, but it had only been his grandfather letting the engine hatch door drop. Pops brushed his hands together.
Still as sexy as the day she purred to life for the first time. The carburetor could probably use an adjustment, though. You'll get better fuel efficiency with a little tweaking.
I'll take care of it.
Thanks, Pops.
You two kids ready to go?
I need my beauty sleep.
Ready whenever you are.
Grant stood and attempted to help his grandfather up the gangplank and over to the dock, though Pops wasn't having it. He swatted Grant's hand away and climbed off the boat on his own. Grant and I exchanged smiles, and I let him help me off the boat. The three of us walked together back to the waiting car. It was a short ride back to Grant's grandparents' house, and Pops climbed out of the car as soon as we stopped. Grant hopped out to follow him. When he got to the front door of the house, Pops turned back and yelled,
"Goodbye, Charlize!"
I poked my head out the car door.
"Later, balls!"
Pops spoke to Grant, although I could still hear him.
"Boy, she's a looker, ain't she?"
Grant smiled.
"That she is, Pops. That she is."
The two men disappeared inside, and a few minutes later, a woman I assumed was Grant's grandmother opened the door again. She hugged Grant, and he waited until the door was closed, then double-checked it to make sure it was locked before coming back to the car. He climbed inside and shut the door.
"Sorry about that."
"Oh no, don't be. Your grandfather is a pistol. That was fun, and your boat is beautiful."
"Thank you."
"Do you get to use it often?" Grant hesitated before answering.
"Every day. I live on it."
"Really? That's very cool." I raised an eyebrow. "But you said you don't bring dates on the boat."
"I don't. I also have an apartment downtown in Marina del Rey. Some people use a house as their primary residence and a boat for fun. I do the opposite."
Interesting. We talked the rest of the short drive to my place. Our conversation was casual, but it was impossible to feel completely relaxed near Grant. He just took up too much space, both literally on the seat next to me and metaphorically inside my head. The driver slowed as we turned down my street. I pointed to the tall apartment building, suddenly glad I lived in a nice neighborhood. "This is me." The limousine pulled to the curb, and the casual and relaxed mood abruptly came to a halt. It felt like the end of a date with an awkward goodbye, rather than saying goodnight to the CEO of the company I worked for. I put my hand on the door latch and spoke really quickly. "Thank you for the ride home." Grant leaned forward to his driver.
"Give me a few minutes, Ben. I'm going to walk Ms. St. James to the door."
"That's not necessary," I said. Grant reached and put his hand over mine, which was still holding the door handle, and pushed open the car door. He climbed out first and extended his hand.
"It's necessary."
With his hand on my lower back, Grant guided me ahead of him up the narrow walkway. I felt the heat from his palm scorching my skin and wondered if it was my body or his that was on fire. Maybe it was the connection between us. My apartment was on the 3rd floor, and he insisted on riding the elevator up with me, too. At my door, Grant shoved his hands into his trouser pockets. "Thanks again for the ride," I said.
"Of course."
"Okay, well, you have a good night."
I did some sort of a curt, clumsy wave and fumbled to open the lock. Stepping inside, I looked back and smiled awkwardly one last time before shutting the door. Then I proceeded to lean my head against it and bang a few times. God, you're such a doofus around that man. Sighing, I walked toward the kitchen. But the bell stopped me after a few steps. Grant must have forgotten something. I walked back and checked the peephole before opening the door. I smiled playfully. Miss me already? Grant shook his head and frowned. He looked like he wasn't very happy to be standing where he was. Blowing out an audible breath, he said,
Go out with me Friday night.
You sort of look like you're asking me something dreadful. He raked a hand through his hair.
Sorry. I know it's probably not the smartest idea, but I'd really like to take you out.
I nibbled on my bottom lip. Is it not the smartest idea because I work for you? Or not the smartest because we met by me sending you a drunk email to tell you off? Grant smiled.
Both.
I liked his honesty, and his jawline, and that tiny little dimple on the left side of his cheek that I'd just noticed for the first time. In fact, I couldn't think straight when gazing at his handsome face. So I looked down to gather my thoughts, but all that did was remind me of the other things I liked about him. His broad shoulders, narrow waistline. Damn, big feet, too. Yet even with all that beautiful packaging, I still wasn't sold. Though my reasoning wasn't the same as his. Grant was wary because I worked for him. I was wary because something told me this man could eat me alive. After inwardly debating the pros and cons, I looked up. How about drinks? We see how it goes?
If that's what you prefer.
I exhaled. I think so.
Then drinks it is. I'll pick you up at 7.
Could we have them on Leilani? I asked. Maybe watch the sunset? The muscle in Grant's jaw flexed.
My apartment overlooks the harbor and faces west. The terrace gets a beautiful sunset. Or there's a nice bar down at the pier.
I'd prefer your boat, rather than your porn palace. Grant's lip twitched.
Porn palace?
You said you use your boat to live and your apartment for fun. His eyes roamed my face.
If I say yes, is it a date?
I wanted to say yes in the worst way. I was incredibly attracted to him physically, but I also found his direct, no-bullshit attitude a turn-on. Not to mention, he'd let down his guard around his grandfather and shown there was more to him than the gruff exterior. Yet, something about him terrified me. I looked him in the eyes. Do you just want to sleep with me? Or do you want to actually take me out? Grant smiled.
Yes.
I laughed and shook my head. I appreciate the honesty, but can I think about it? His cocky smile fell.
Of course.
Thank you. Have a good night, Grant. I shut the door feeling deflated, but inside I knew I'd done the right thing. Nothing about Grant Lexington was simple, especially the fact that he was my boss.
Chapter 13. Mr. Lexington, my assistant buzzed into my office. You have Ireland St. James on line 1. Would you like me to tell her you're about to go into a meeting? I stood with a file in my hand, ready to head to a 10 o'clock meeting, but I sat back down. No, I'll take it. Tell Mark Anderson I'll be a few minutes late and to start without me. I tossed the file onto my desk, picked up the receiver, and leaned back in my chair. Ms. St. James, it's been 3 days. You must have had a lot to think about. Sorry, I've been busy, but I wanted to get back to you on your dinner invitation, or rather our discussion about having drinks. Okay. You seem like a really nice guy. I sat up in my chair and cut her off. Let's finish this conversation over lunch. Well, can't we just... I interrupted a second time. No, I have a meeting now. Be in my office at 1 o'clock. I'll have lunch waiting. But we'll talk then. She sighed. Fine. On my way to my meeting, I stopped at Millie's desk. Can you please order lunch for me and Ms. St. James for 1 o'clock? Of course. What would you like? Whatever. Do you want salads, sandwiches? Is she vegan? How the hell would I know? Just order a few things. Millie's forehead wrinkled. Okay. And if I'm late, tell her to start eating without me. The mail just came. Would you like me to put today's letter on your desk? Shred it, I bit out. When my meeting finally broke at 1:05, I was impatient. Some people took 10 minutes to dance around and spit out one damn fact. For the last hour, I'd found it hard to focus, too busy wondering if my next appointment was going to stand me up. The tension in my shoulders dissipated as I walked into my office and found Ireland snooping. I shut the door behind me. Looking for something? She turned with a framed photo in her hand. Is this you and your grandfather? I walked over. The photo had been on the credenza since I'd moved into this office 18 months ago, but I hadn't really looked at it since. Pops and I were fishing off the side of Leilani. I must have been about 7 or 8. He caught a thrasher shark that day. I caught a sunburn. Ireland smiled and set the frame back down. Lunch was set up at the small seating area rather than at my desk. I held out my hand. Please, have a seat. I'm a few minutes late, and the food is probably getting cold. Ireland sat on the couch, and I took the seat across from her. Are more people joining us? She asked. There are 6 different lunches here. I didn't know what you liked. Her face softened. Thank you. I'm not picky, but I'll take this cheeseburger if you don't mind. I'm starving. Whatever you like. I grabbed a turkey sandwich and wasted no time getting to the point. I preferred to discuss business first, so I could actually enjoy my food after. So, you were about to give me the, you're a nice guy, but, brush off speech. It's one I don't hear too often. Because no one says no to you? No, because I'm not that nice of a guy. Ireland picked up a French fry and pointed it at me. Well, that in itself is a reason I shouldn't be having dinner or drinks with you, isn't it? I leaned over and bit the fry from her fingers. Probably, but I'd like a chance to change your mind anyway. I get the feeling you're wary of me because you sense I'm not being forthright with you. But I'm in a difficult position here. I can't say whatever is on my mind because you work for me, and I don't want you to feel pressured. I don't feel pressured by you as a boss, even though you did bark at me to come up here for lunch. I somehow know my job isn't at stake, and it's just you being you. If I'm being honest, your barking felt real, and I'd rather see that man than the hesitant one who is trying to be appropriate. So you prefer me inappropriate and barking? She laughed. I prefer you to just be you and not filter what you're thinking. My eyes locked with hers. I've found that often a woman thinks she wants unfiltered honesty, but it turns out not to be the case once she hears it. You sure about that?
Positive.
I reached over and took her hand. Good. Then let's be honest. I haven't been able to stop thinking about you in days. Hell, since you told me off in that email. You asked me the other night if I just wanted to sleep with you. I absolutely want to be inside you. I'd lock that door and take you on my desk right now, if you were game. She swallowed. But if you'd like to have drinks and watch the sunset on my boat, I'm up for that, too. I haven't had anything but a sexual relationship with a woman in 7 years, and to be candid, I'm not entirely sure what I'm capable of offering anymore. But if you'd like to start with drinks, we can most definitely see where it goes. Ireland started to shake her head. I couldn't get a read on the surprised look on her face, whether it was a good surprise or one that confirmed she should run the other way. Was that supposed to be you pleading your case for me to go out with you? Because you basically told me you suck at relationships and might just only want to have sex with me. And oh, by the way, if I'm up for banging on your desk, that's an available option too. That depends. Did it work? She laughed. Oh my God. I think I've lost my mind because I think it might have. Good. Then shut up and eat your lunch because your food is getting cold. Ireland was still laughing and shaking her head as she bit into her cheeseburger. I'm glad I wasn't the only one that had started to lose his mind, especially since watching her sink her teeth into her lunch made me salivate at the thought of sinking my teeth into her skin. With the important stuff out of the way, we managed to have a relaxed meal. We talked about work, our routines, and she asked if my grandfather had attempted any escapes again, which I liked. She was thoughtful, and her interest seemed genuine. Too soon, Ireland's phone buzzed. She had a reminder set on her phone, and it made me think of how I had Millie call me to get out of stuff. I eyed her cell. "Is that a made-up appointment to help get you out of here?" She brushed a hair from her face. "No, I wish it were. I have to run out to meet my contractor. I'm building a house in Agora Hills. Construction is supposed to finish in a few weeks, but my builder said there might be some sort of a delay, and he wants to discuss plans."
"That doesn't sound good."
"No, it definitely doesn't. Especially since my roommate is moving out in 2 weeks when she gets married, and our lease is up in just a couple of months."
"I have a good real estate agent who can help you locate something temporary if you need it."
"Thank you."
She squinted at me.
"So is that something you do on a regular basis?"
"What?"
"Make up appointments to get out of a meeting faster."
I smirked. "Occasionally." Just then, my desk phone buzzed, and Millie came over the intercom.
"Mr. Lexington, Leo arrived a few minutes early. He just ran to the bathroom."
Ireland raised a brow. "That was a total coincidence. Leo is an actual person. I'm sure he'll be busting in here when he gets back if I'm not out." "So you'll get to meet him. He has a button on his ass that makes him pop up after more than 10 seconds of waiting if he doesn't have a video game in his hand."
"Is Leo an adult or child?"
"Child, who thinks he's an adult. He's my... We spend time together every Wednesday afternoon. It's part of a program my mother started 20 years ago for foster kids. It's sort of like a Big Brothers, Big Sisters program, except all the kids in it are in foster care, and all of the Bigs are former foster children. Bigs make a commitment to mentor a little from 5 to 25. Foster kids get bounced around a lot, and having the same Big for years gives them consistency." She shook her head.
"That's awesome. But there are really two sides to you, aren't there? You should have told me that story the other night. I probably would have said yes to dinner."
I chuckled. "Now you tell me." Ireland smiled.
"But I'm also glad you didn't make up an appointment to ditch me."
"Likewise."
"I should get going anyway. We both have things to do."
Ireland stood.
"Thank you for lunch. Next time, you don't need to go overboard and order so much. I'm not picky. I eat anything."
"Glad to know you're planning a next time. I'll pick you up Friday at 7.
"I'll come to you."
"I'm capable of picking you up. Besides, I already know where you live." She smiled.
"And I'm capable of driving myself."
I shook my head. "You're always a pain in the ass, aren't you? I'll see you Friday at 7 at the marina." Ireland picked up my empty food container and hers from the table and shoved them into a bag. She held the garbage out to me.
"Oh, and I should tell you I don't kiss on the first date."
I took the handle of the bag along with her hand and used it to yank her closer to me. "That's good, because this was our first date. See you Friday, Ireland."
"I don't want the alarm connected to the police station. I don't like guns in the house."
The installer looked at me, and I motioned for him to keep working as I guided Grams into the kitchen to talk. "Grams, if the alarm goes off and you don't hear it, they'll know to go looking for Pops. I registered him with the police department so they'll understand that it's more than likely a missing person and not a break-in they need to show up for with guns blazing." She sat down.
"I'm capable of taking care of him."
The worse Pops got, the harder things grew for her, too. She felt disabled herself for needing any help with her husband of 50 years. I sat across from her and covered her hand with mine. An older, independent couple didn't view taking help much differently than a foster kid might. They didn't want to rely on anyone but themselves. Logical arguments don't work, because what they're fighting is emotional and not practical. So just like with Leo, I knew the best thing to do wasn't reason with my grandmother. She needed her emotions validated.
"I get that you don't need any help, Grams. You could handle him all on your own, but I want to help. If Mom were still here, she'd be moved in and sleeping on your bedroom floor to make sure Pops didn't wander off and get hurt. Letting me help Pops is for Mom and me, not because you can't do it yourself."
Grams's eyes watered. I'd broken out the big guns mentioning Mom, but it was the truth, and we needed to get past her unwillingness. Unfortunately, things weren't going to be improving. She squeezed my hand and nodded.
Fine. But if I'm taking your help, there are some other things I could use a hand with.
Name it. Leo busted into the kitchen and Pops followed behind.
Look at this thing Pops made. It's an electric chair.
Great. More shit I'd have to explain to Leo's social worker at some point. In his retirement, my grandfather had taken up building replica miniature houses. All of his years as a wooden boat builder had come in handy, and he'd spent the first 2 years of being home building an exact miniature replica of his and Gramps' house, down to the bathroom fixtures and chipped bluestone in the yard. Leo and I visited Grams and Pops a lot, and he tried to get Leo interested in his little hobby. But being a typical 11-year-old, Leo thought making a dollhouse was boring. That is, until Pops started to work on a creepy dollhouse. The entire thing was a freak show of weird shit, but Pops and Leo had built every little bit of that freak show, and Leo had gotten pretty good with woodworking. I took the miniature electric chair from Leo's hands and checked it out. The details were pretty amazing, down to the tiny black leather wrist straps on the arms of the chair and what looked like a few drops of blood stained on the seat. It's great, but do me a favor and don't bring it home to your foster mom. She already suspects I might be a devil worshiper after you brought home that creepy miniature doll so you could work on mangling it.
Fine, he rolled his eyes.
Whatever.
Grams got up.
What can I make you to eat, Leo? How about a peanut butter and banana sandwich for a snack?
He grinned.
With no crust?
Grams walked to the bread drawer and opened it.
People who eat crust can't be trusted.
Leo took a seat on a stool at the granite kitchen bar and propped his feet up on the one next to him. I knocked them off. Feet off the furniture. Pop said he was going to go take a nap, so I told him I'd tag along to check on the ceiling fan Grams had said wasn't working. When I came back to the kitchen a few minutes later, Grams and Leo were laughing. What's so funny?
You in a Santa suit?
Leo chuckled. I swiped a piece of his peanut butter and banana sandwich from his plate and shoved it into my mouth. What are you talking about? Grams answered.
Earlier, when we were talking about how you like to help, you said you'd do anything I needed, right?
I narrowed my eyes.
Yeah,
but why does the way you're asking me now feel like a trick question? Leo laughed.
Because she's going to sucker you into playing Santa this weekend instead of Pops.
I pointed a finger at Leo. Watch your language.
What did I say, sucker? That's not even a bad word. I've heard you say worse.
I'm an adult.
So?
So you're not. Grams got up and took Leo's empty plate.
He has a point, Grant. If you want him to act a certain way, you need to mind your own rules.
Leo boasted a smug smile. The little shit knew I wouldn't argue with Grams.
Yeah, Grant. I only say bad words because I hear them from you.
I made a face that screamed bullshit. My ass. Leo pointed to me and looked at Grams.
See? There he goes again.
Grams sighed and turned on the sink to rinse Leo's plate.
Settle down now, boys.
The brat was just about to eat the last bite of his sandwich when I swiped it from his hand and popped it into my mouth.
Hey!
Leo whined. I grinned. You heard the lady. Settle down now, kid. Grams came back to the table.
Grant, I really do need you to play Santa this weekend at the Pia's Place Christmas in July party. You know Pops usually does it, but I don't think he's up to it this year. Sometimes he forgets what he's doing, and I don't want him to scare any of the little kids.
Can't you find someone else? Grams frowned.
It's a family tradition now. I think it should be passed down to you.
Leo grinned from ear to ear.
Yeah, Grant, it's a family tradition.
The little shit was in rare form today, but I couldn't say no to my grandmother, even though I suspected I'd been set up from the get-go today. She'd lured me into the conversation about doing things for her just so I couldn't refuse.
Fine,
I pouted. But if any little kids pee on me, I'm telling you now, next year the tradition will be passed to Kate's husband. Grams walked over and cupped my cheeks.
Thank you, sweetheart. It means a lot to me.
Later in the evening, on the ride to Leo's house, he mentioned he was going up to San Bernardino next weekend, so we wouldn't be at the Christmas in July festival this year. I glanced over at him and back to the road. San Bernardino? What are you doing there? I knew of only one reason he might be making that trip, and I hoped I was wrong.
My mom's back in town. She's picking me up and taking me to visit my sister.
Shit. Rose is taking you to see Lily? Leo frowned.
That's what my social worker said.
Chapter 14. 11 years ago.
Don't let her drive. She was up all night again, you know?
Mom whispered as we sat in the kitchen drinking coffee together.
Yeah, I know. She was in the garage painting. She'll probably pass out in the car on the drive up. I won't let her behind the wheel.
Lily had been living with us again for a few months now, her fourth time back in 4 years. The foster care system had created a vicious cycle. Every time Lily would start to get settled in with us, they'd put her back with her mom, even though she never wanted to go at first. Then, once she was living with her mom again, she would feel responsible for taking care of her and not want to put her back into a mental health facility. Things would eventually get really bad, and Lily would be removed and upset. She'd come back to our house, and it would take a few months for her to settle in again. 7 or 8 months later, the entire circle jerk happened again. Broken system. Though, as of today, Lily was officially not part of the fucked up world of foster care anymore, because today was her 18th birthday. Unfortunately, the only thing she wanted for her birthday was to drive upstate and visit her mom, which was one of the reasons she'd been up all night painting again. She got anxious when there was anything to do with Rose, and painting soothed her when her mind couldn't rest.
"Dad and I were talking," Mom said. "We think maybe Lily should see a counselor. Someone privately, outside of the social services system. She's had 5 different counselors since she first came here, and I think she would benefit from some consistency. She's been through a lot. The constant moves back and forth, being taken away from her mother, us moving from Big Bear Lake closer to LA because of all my appointments, my being sick."
Of course it was a lot, and she was right. Lily took Mom's ovarian cancer diagnosis just as badly as I did. I had no doubt Lily should talk to someone on a regular basis, but she'd been looking forward to her 18th birthday, mainly because the state couldn't force her to go see a shrink once a month anymore. To her, seeing a therapist of any kind meant she was crazy like her mother.
"I don't know, Mom. She's not going to want to go. If anyone can talk her into it, you can. You two are closer than brother and sister."
I frowned. I felt bad that we were still lying to my mom and to everyone. But if my parents had known we were a couple when we were 15, they might not have taken Lily back. The state definitely wouldn't have allowed it. Then, as we got older, we didn't say anything because it was easier to have our privacy. If Mom knew we were together, we'd never be allowed behind a closed door again, especially not with my little sisters around. "I'll see what I can do." Lily swept into the kitchen and sing-songed, "Good morning." She was full of energy, even though she'd been up all night painting. It seemed like she had 2 moods lately, up or down. There was no real in-between anymore. But I could understand it. She'd been through a lot.
"Happy birthday."
Mom stood and brought Lily in for a hug. She cupped her cheeks along with some hair.
18.
Today brings you a lot of freedom. You've spent time with us over the years because you had to, but I hope you'll stay for many more now because you want to. You're part of this family, Lily.
"Thank you, Pia."
Mom sniffled and shook her head.
"I don't want to ruin your birthday and get all emotional, so let me just give you your gifts."
She turned around, took 2 wrapped boxes off the kitchen counter, and handed them to Lily.
"Happy birthday, sweetheart."
Lily thanked her and opened the first one. Her eyes lit up as she found a big set of expensive oil paints she always visited in the store.
"Thank you so much. I've wanted these for so long, but they're so expensive, you shouldn't have."
"Grant told me how much you admired them." She opened the second box, stationery with Lily imprinted on it, and lilies wrapped around her name. She ran her finger across the top.
"This is beautiful. I figured you could use it to write to Grant when he goes away to college."
Lily's eyes jumped to me, but then she smiled at Mom.
"Thank you.
It's perfect. I really love it.
4 years ago, when Lily moved back in with her mom the first time, she told me she would write to me every day we couldn't be together. I thought she was exaggerating, but the last time I counted, I had over 500 letters. Some days she sent me 3 or 4 pages about her day, other days she'd just write a few sentences, and sometimes I'd get a poem or a picture.